Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the ALS Association Greater Philadelphia Chapter Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Tony Heil, your Director of Communications and Public Policy at the Greater Philadelphia Chapter. Speaking of public policy, we are actually in the halls of Congress, quite literally this time, though you can't see because it's a podcast. We are here in the Longworth House Office Building, and not to get ourselves in any trouble, but I came up with our guest today in the members-only elevator, so we're feeling pretty special today on our ALS podcast. Our guests are longtime advocates and people involved in the chapter, Karen, Chantel, Kathy, and Chrissy Delaney, and niece Delaney McCormick, who is named after the great Delaney family. And so the five Delaney girls, even though there's about 500 other Delaneys, and the group keeps getting larger as they adopt more people into their family, including, as I've been told, myself. So welcome, Delaney crew, to our ALS Association podcast.
Welcome. Thank you for having us. Thank you.
For anyone that doesn't know, the Delaneys are involved because of a family connection to ALS, a long family connection, but the person who's most important with that today is Karen. So Karen, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I was diagnosed with ALS in 2011. And as you stated, I have a familial form of ALS, unfortunately, in 1989. Our mother was diagnosed with ALS, and that's when our family found out that we did have a hereditary gene.
You found out in 1989?
My parents found out in 1989, and then the girls, us, my sisters and myself, found out when we were in our 20s.
But you found that it was familial then?
Yes.
That's what you mean? I'm sorry.
Yes. So my mom didn't realize that she had a genetic predisposition to getting ALS until then.
But at that time, did we know what the gene was, or just knew that it was familial?
We just knew it was familial, yeah. We found out what gene it was when I was tested in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So
you were tested after you had been diagnosed.
Yes. Yeah. I had already been diagnosed and, we had to make a lot of decisions as a family as to, you know, how much do we publicize this and where to go as far as research. So, I think, you know, as always, we are a huge family. We make a lot of decisions together and we advocate together and we do research together. We do everything together. As I always say, I can't get by without them.
Right. And I have a feeling that they probably can't get by without you because
heck yeah.
I haven't really seen many of the family on their own, though Chrissy's been in our office a lot. Kathy designed pins for the event today. Everyone in the family goes really above the Delaney standard, I guess we can call it, instead of above and beyond.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So how long have you guys been involved with coming to D.C. for advocacy?
This is our fourth year.
And that's my fourth year, too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. It's actually, Chrissy has been, this is my third year, but Karen and Kathy have come from 4 years ago. Delaney and Chantel, it's their second year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's an amazing experience.
And had you been involved in any of this when your mom was living with ALS? I know you were involved with the other causes, with the Walk to Defeat ALS, ALS Express, but had you done any advocacy before then?
We had, and our father has, because he's been involved with the local chapter, significantly involved since 1992, and he did more advocacy than we did. Initially, we did a lot of the events, but not as much on the advocacy end, and mm-hmm. I wish we had done more now that we've become more active in it, to see what, it does make such a big difference to have your voice heard.
And if you hear noise in the background, like I said, we are literally in the halls of Congress recording this very special podcast. And we want to say thank you to Congressman Matt Cartwright for providing us the hallway, I guess we could say, for this. So you knew you learned that you had ALS in 2011. And you guys are different than a lot of other folks in that you're kind of experts even beforehand. So what was it like for all of you with that time? I'm sure it was very difficult because you knew what to expect.
Beyond difficult. I mean, beyond difficult when Karen told us because she was so young. We all kind of...
And you were, what, 37?
Yes.
Look at me.
Right. And we, you know, kind of always knew the likelihood for each of us, 50% chance of getting it in familial cases. However, didn't think it would rear its head maybe until we were a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't expecting that it would show itself so soon. So we were certainly devastated.
Yeah. And as silly as it sounds,
never expected it to be the youngest of the four sisters.
Right.
Because
why
she's the youngest. We surely thought, at least I surely thought it would, you know, more likely maybe be me.
Yeah.
You know, it was, it seems, like I said, it seems that, you know,
special.
You think that, of course, it could be any of us at any time, but in my mind, it was still very much a surprise.
I remember when you told me.
And this is Chantelle, the cousin speaking.
Yes.
And you're really not, I mean, technically you're a cousin, but you're really
a pseudo
sister.
Yeah, I like that. I remember when Karen told me and a few, my sister and a few other people, in the telling of it, I think what shocked us all was we all kind of thought, well, if one of them gets it, I mean, Aunt Lorraine was in her late 40s, you know, mid to late 40s, and, you know, and science has come so far, you know, if something happens, it's going to be well beyond, you know, if she got it then, anybody who gets it's going to be much later, and then it was just so shocked, it was just so, like, viscerally painful.
Yeah, it's painful even to me. I mean, my grandfather, as I mentioned before, he has died from ALS, but I didn't have the expert knowledge that you guys have. So do you think it was harder for you guys knowing everything, or do you think it's harder because you've met a lot of people, those who are learning and don't know what to expect?
So what I always say is it's our silver lining, if you want to call it that, is the fact that we've been involved in the organization for 20 years. We kind of know what to expect, what to do, who to call upon. It doesn't make it any easier, but the people who are blindsided by it don't have that knowledge, you know.
So since you, like you said, you knew what to expect a bit, is that why advocacy and awareness is so important? Because you want people to know not just about raising money for the cause, but about where they can get help.
Absolutely, because, I mean, part of it is being connected and feeling like you're heard and that somebody understands you. I think the quality of life is better because then you're around people who you don't have to explain yourself over and over again what the issue is, and like you'll get better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hope you feel better soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. Today's the best I'm going to feel.
I wanted to say in our meeting that we just had when you had this same conversation, you know, even like buying a birthday card. Or, you know what I mean? Or, like, when I've gone to buy Karen a card at the store, it's like, you know, oh, getting old and gray. And, you know, like, all these stupid things that you think about. And it's like you have to be really careful even buying a stupid card as to what the card says. So it's not the wrong thing.
I don't
have
gray hair thanks to my hairdresser.
Right.
But it's just everything.
So you guys have been working a lot on a lot of different causes. And you've met with a lot of members of Congress and state legislators. Do you feel like the awareness has jumped up a lot here in Congress?
I think with the combination of the advocacy that we've been doing for 15 years now and then the addition of the Ice Bucket Challenge over the summer.
And technology.
I was going to say in technology, everything, social media. So I think that there's more awareness about ALS. I don't know that there's as much learned about ALS. We're still teaching people what ALS is. But I think when you first mentioned it, there's no blank stares anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has at least heard of it,
Yeah. Which
is great.
They've heard of the disease, but they don't know what our priorities are necessarily.
Right.
They don't know. One of our issues is the Steve Gleason Act and getting access to speech-generating devices so people can talk and speak with communication and iPads and such. But I'm sure most people we meet with, they don't know that that's an issue at all, right?
Right. Even just in our last meeting, there's another patient in the meeting with us, and he's a bulbar presentation, so his speech and swallowing are affected first, and I'm a limb presentation. And I said, even for speech-generating devices, our needs are different. Because
mm-hmm.
he has use of his hands, but not his voice. Most likely, when I lose my voice, my hands will already be gone, so I would need eye gaze.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just speech-generating devices. One does not fit all. And someone said ALS is like a snowflake. No two are alike.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's not a, you know, cut and dry, one size fits all.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's important to let other people know, because I think a lot of members of Congress, even if they did the Ice Bucket Challenge, still don't know a lot about the disease. They may be very smart people, smart staff, but they don't know what you guys know.
Well, I don't think, unless you've known someone and someone close to you, who you spend time with, unless you've been with someone you see them at home, spend a day with them to see what their daily life is like, it's very hard for anyone to really understand what this disease is like and how it affects you. and how it affects just your day-to-day tasks. You know, I mean, someone may look like they're doing well, but can that person bathe themselves? Can they dress themselves? Can they feed themselves? You know, can they still drive? You know, how do they get their groceries?
Do they have a job?
Who cooks their meals? You know, there's so many things that the average person, it's just not on their radar. So yeah, maybe they've heard of ALS, but they don't know what really, how someone with ALS is living.
And I think, and that's part of your job, and one of the things you've been doing, not just with advocacy, though, because you do a couple other events, right?
Yes, we do every event we can. We've got the ALS Express. We've got the Walk to Defeat ALS. We go to every Walk to Defeat ALS we can that's local enough.
I go to three. And the research presentation.
Research presentation. You go to Hot Chocolate. You come to the Phillies Festival.
On the Longwood Gardens.
Longwood Gardens.
For a nice day out.
I don't know what else there is that you guys can go to, aside from other things you might be doing for your events. So before we go on further, you can join the Delaney's, Delaney Strong as they're known, at the ALS Express May 30th, leading into Wildwood, New Jersey, and that's at www.als-express.org, or you can go to our website, alsphiladelphia.org, and you can join them at a number of walks to defeat ALS. That's at www.gpcwalktodefeatals.org. That's for Greater Philadelphia Chapter. And you can find all sorts of other things at alsphiladelphia.org where the Delaney's are most likely involved in some way, shape, or form.
Hershey's coming up.
Hershey's coming up on Saturday, June 6th. It's going to be a really fun Hershey walk this year. Lots of new things. The walks are often different each year, not just with shirts, but different teams, different promotions, and things like that. So what's is the walk a lot of fun for you guys, especially getting different ones?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think each walk that I go to, I used to do Hershey, Lehigh, and Philadelphia. For various reasons, where I live, where my roommate from college lives, and Chantel comes to the Hershey walk is where she lives. And then Philadelphia, of course, is the big one that the whole Delaney clan comes to.
We can number around
150 to 200. But I do think that they're so positive, and everybody's laughing, smiling. There's a lot of kids there. And it's not a strenuous walk. It's more of an awareness, like, let's meet each other, let's have a good time. There's singing and flash mobs.
You can find their flash mob video on our Facebook page. It's still our top video, I think, that we've shown.
As it should be.
Right.
It's just a day filled with hope.
Yeah. But like you said, Chrissy, you get 200 people for your walk team at Greater Philadelphia Chapter, and you guys are so involved. But most people, their first time starting, they don't have a big team for any of these events, or they don't have as big of a family as you do. How do you make sure to identify with them? Because here in D.C., we have the biggest chapter delegation. And on the one hand, I sometimes want to brag about that. But on the other hand, I know it's easier for us to do that. And I know I really sympathize and empathize with the people who are coming from Texas and Colorado who are flying in power wheelchairs and stuff like that. So what do you guys do to identify with the other families?
Well, obviously every voice is important. So it doesn't matter if you're one person or your delegation like ours, which is fantastic. Each person's going in with a passion about what they think is important and what they want to have happen for people living with this disease. So I don't think it really matters how many people there are. And certainly we get to meet people every year who are coming from all these different places, and you connect because you have things in common. Tell about the girl we met. We met a girl at breakfast the other morning. Actually, it was her friend, came in, sat with us, and we were talking with her, and she was here because her 26-year-old friend was just diagnosed and had never met a person who had ALS before. So she said she was kind of overwhelmed, but she felt like she was in a community that got her. Mm-hmm. So I think for us coming here, you are with all these people who get you, and there's an instant connection. So I don't think it matters how big the delegation is, but certainly since we're so involved with it, we are very open-armed to whomever. Like if we can help somebody feel more comfortable or help them through something, we want to do that.
You know, and actually the walk, my dad, this is Chantel, my dad had a friend who passed from ALS, and my dad was very involved towards the end of Eric's life and kind of going over and hanging out with him and bringing happy hour drinks and spending time with him and helping his wife with some of the caretaking issues. And the year after Eric passed, his wife wanted to participate in the walk and didn't have a team. So Uncle Larry, I think, you know, got a Delaney Strong shirt for her and the couple other people that were with her, and they came and joined Delaney Strong, and we made sure Eric's name was there. So we stopped and took a picture. So even, you know, doing like strong isn't just for Karen, right? It's so much more.
Strong for whomever.
It's
based on it, but it's like
anybody can be doing strong.
Well, that's part of the reason you're always adopting people into your team and family, right?
We just want the biggest numbers.
Well, but you want to be there for the people who don't have those big numbers, right?
Absolutely. Even more so with the people who aren't connected. You know, all of us have met people who know somebody or a friend who, and they don't know. People see, and they see a bracelet on our hand. They're like, oh, do you know anything about it? I'm like, yes, what do you need? I'm giving out the address, the email address to the chapter, because you want people to feel like there's a place to go. People have already figured out all the nuts and bolts. You don't have to feel like you're having to figure out what the heck am I supposed to do now. We've already done that. Mm-hmm. So
I think it goes back to us knowing how fortunate we are.
That silver lining,
yeah,
too.
That we, you know, walked into this knowing what ALS was, basically ready to go when I was diagnosed.
There's no ramp-up time for our family.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's
we're
being
ramped up.
A patient being diagnosed sporadically, the learning curve is so great that it is just all-encompassing. This disease is, a full-time job. Managing this disease, and most people don't have the luxury of not working and not taking care of their family. So anyway, we can help others, whether it's just emotional support or helping direct them to services, education. I guess I can go off topic a little bit. Karen and I took a course through NEALS, which is the Northeast ALS Consortium, to teach us more about clinical trials. We had a whole weekend of learning to understand the specifics of how clinical trials work, so that we can then go out and educate others about clinical trials. And what we found is that we really just need to bring awareness. Many other patients, and again, because they're so consumed by just living day to day with this disease, have not had the time to look to see if they're interested in participating in research or clinical trials. So we've been going to support groups and trying to let people know what's out there and give them an understanding of how trials work so they can make educated decisions about whether participating in a trial or research is right for them, and then where to go with it. So we provide them all the resources so they know how to get started in looking for a research or a trial that they'd be eligible for. So
as a family, you're not just attacking this on the fundraising end. You're doing it on the awareness end. You're doing it on the advocacy, on the research. Because you haven't met a clinical trial you wouldn't do, right? Is really what you've said a lot, right? You've done, how many clinical trials have you done, Karen?
Well, I've done two drug trials at this point, and I have no idea how many research
studies
I've done. Because quite honestly, I've lost count, but I've donated skin several times, blood, urine, hair, fingernails, spinal fluid. Pretty much to anybody who's willing to take it from me, anybody who wants my information. If I can help in any way with research, then I want to help.
Mm-hmm.
So, at this point, I'm 4 years from diagnosis, so I don't qualify as far as the eligibility criteria for a lot of the trials. So
you take whatever you can get.
Take what I can get.
Do whatever you can.
Yep.
And you work on trying to make sure other people know that doing those trials are good, they're beneficial, because a lot of people don't get involved in research, right?
Actually, one of the things I say to everybody that we meet and we talk to is don't discount, doing a study versus a trial, because when you do a study, that's where they're going to find information about what causes ALS.
Look for biomarkers.
So what does a study do as opposed to a trial? Like a clinical trial is working off a drug and seeing who's taking it, right?
Right.
Or a treatment.
Yeah,
and a study would do what exactly?
Well, I mean, just for instance, the IPS study that I did down at Johns Hopkins.
IPS is?
Induced pluripotent stem cells.
So it's easier to say IPS.
It's easier to say IPS, exactly. You don't give an ALS patient a tongue twister. So they took my skin cells, and what they're doing is breaking them down into stem cells and then fibroblasts with the hopes of then putting compounds in with my fibroblasts to see if they respond.
Mm-hmm.
And if a compound does respond, or if my cells respond to a compound, then, and say somebody else was sporadic or another familial patient, we all respond in the same way. You can then say, okay, well, how do we get this compound tested?
Mm-hmm.
Will it be safe in humans? You know, so you're cutting off a lot of the lag time in the science of things by random testing. So you're saying like this subgroup of ALS, they have all responded. So
then instead of going having one drug company try and push one way of doing something, now you know something you can take to all of them.
Yes.
And they know this is something that's worth going down this avenue.
And I think that we'll find that trials are more successful also, because mm-hmm. if you're looking at a subgroup of ALS patients as opposed to this, like we said, like every patient, it's like a snowflake. We're all different. If you find a subgroup that's responding, I think you're going to get better results.
It's like in construction, measure twice, cut once, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't have a chance to do it again.
Yeah, so that's why I always stress the importance of doing, because people are very focused on doing a drug trial,
mm-hmm.
but unless you know what you're aiming for, there's no point to a drug trial.
Mm-hmm.
You need a target, and studies are going to find the targets.
Right, and in answer to your original question about what's the difference, I mean, oftentimes a research study is something that is a one-time thing. Like I did also as a control group member in a brain study. So it was a couple hours of our time, and they studied some things with our brain. We did another one for digestion. There's a study that Karen also participates in where she wears these things called trackers on her wrists and ankles. And that gets done repeatedly over the course of several months. But these are things that are very easy to participate in.
I actually forget that I do them. That's funny
yeah.
you say them.
Those are trackers. That's not just to find Karen in the wild, right? That's like a
correct.
Thing.
Correct. That's not in case she escapes. It's measuring, I believe, mobility.
And tracking my mobility
yeah.
from when I joined the study until I can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see my own progress.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, progression is more like what I see. But.
Right.
But what's mm-hmm. nice about most research studies is the involvement or the effort or the time that the patient has to put into it is quite minimal. Often there's no cost involved. Or very little cost, maybe transportation, where clinical trials can be more involved, a bigger commitment of time. Oftentimes, you're committing to something that may be several weeks long or several months long.
And so this research is providing a lot more hope and understanding of the disease, but also the way they can do research has changed a lot since your mom had ALS, because they couldn't do IPS studies then,
no.
right? That was their no... Not only not an understanding of how to do it, but there was not the technology to do it. So does that make you guys feel good that there's those kind of studies are available, that things are moving forward in that direction? And do you think that gives
yes.
you a different perspective? Because it's better than it was.
Yes.
People want a cure today, and we understand that, because we do too. And often people say nothing has happened in the last X amount of years. And, we understand where they're coming from, but we also see that a lot has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we have that kind of knowledge of seeing that that things have been moving in a positive direction. We're getting things answered, figuring out things. But, yeah, it's not going to be soon enough or quick enough, for anybody. But there is progress.
Right. It's not quick enough until it's tomorrow.
Right.
So,
but it's not going to be that way. Right.
Right. We want it to be tomorrow.
Yeah.
We want it to be yesterday, not tomorrow.
Right.
But we're glad to see that there's new things happening. And so what's the feeling you get now when you come to D.C. from other people, when you share your stories and hear from them? Do you think that people who've come back here multiple times or the members of Congress themselves are feeling more hopeful or more knowledgeable about what's going on or getting involved more?
Yeah. I'll take this as Kathy. Yes, I do think, as far as meeting with lawmakers, the lawmakers are becoming more knowledgeable. We're building relationships with them. They know us, many of them know us when we come in the door. They remember us, they remember our stories. And I don't mean just us, the Delaney's. I mean, whoever they're meeting with, our stories are really impactful. And they are learning and understanding, why we're asking for the things we're asking for, whether it's signatures and support for a bill to be passed, or it's for continued funding of research. I do feel that they are understanding where we're coming from, and they're understanding the importance of it. And then as far as the other people coming to advocate, it seems to me that you have people returning year and year again. Especially once they've been here for the first time, it's very energizing. It's many people, I don't think anyone needs to be recommitted to this cause, but coming here is very rejuvenating. You get fired up because you
good.
See the good things that are happening.
One of the moments I found really interesting today in our sessions was one of the representatives with whom we were meeting wasn't able to be here because of a surgery. And, you know, his staffer shared that, you know, he was really upset. He was going to be missing the congressional baseball game. And one of the other ALS patients shared, well, you know what? That's our lives every day. He's mm-hmm. going to come back. He's going to recover. This is where we are. And it was just a moment, like, I got goosebumps because it was just a really powerful moment. Like, yeah, that it's a shame. And we hope he gets better. And they said that. We really hope he gets better. But he has a chance to get better.
And that staff person is probably going to remember that pretty easily when you can identify with them.
It was
well.
Powerful. It was a powerful moment.
I bet.
I just got goosebumps again.
And
that's what we said. Like, today is the best day. Like, this is the best I'm going to feel.
Right.
Tomorrow, that's the best I'm going to feel.
Yeah.
Because it's all, it's, I mean, not to say that, you know, it's every day I feel a difference, but I'm not getting better.
Right. And that's tough for not just the four of you with Karen here, but for all of us, including myself, because I started just a few weeks after you were diagnosed, so it's very hard for me. So to speak about how personal it is, like, it's tough for me, because I remember my first advocacy day was with you, and you had fallen and, like, broken or sprained your wrist, or your finger. I just remember you had a cast on, and to me, you just seemed like a regular person at that time. Like, I think you had a wheelchair, maybe, but you might have
only
been walking.
Only for the hill day. Right,
only for the hill day. So, like, I still didn't identify with you as a person with ALS. I thought, oh, she just fell. Like, I would fall. And you're like, no, I have ALS. And you could talk about it like a regular, like, it was casual.
And actually, my first advocacy, because I was walking and I was fine, and I was 37 years older. I had just turned 38, so not your usual patient. I can't tell you how many people asked me if I was here, like, oh, did you have a parent that died, or why are you here? And I would say, well, I did have a parent that, you know, died from ALS, and I have ALS. And when I would say, I have ALS, they looked at me like, what? You know, because they, like you said, like, here I come walking in, and, you know, I look like every other person that's not in a wheelchair. You know, I look like a healthy person, and that's one of the curses of ALS is, like, I always say I'm perfectly healthy except for this one little thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, so people look at you and like, oh, you're doing so great. And it's like, okay, but I can't even dress myself.
Right. So what's that like, how people's reactions to you from the start to now? Because I'm sure it's changed.
Yeah, you know, I left work 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And I was a nurse. So, again, I always say fortunate that the people that I've worked with and been friends with for years are in the medical field, a large majority of them. So I think there's a very quicker acceptance level, you know, when you've dealt with people in medicine. But it's hard for them when they now see me like every 4 months or so.
Yeah.
Because they're seeing the progression much more than somebody who sees me even on a, you know, every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks basis. But it's hard. They tear up. When they say goodbye to me,
mm-hmm.
there are several that are fighting back tears. And I am too, because I know it's hard. I say, I think having ALS for me is one thing, but watching the way it affects everyone around me is actually a lot worse.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's harder for, like, for staff. We rework. We see you guys, like, all the time, which is great. But with certain other people with ALS, we see them every 6 months or maybe more, so it's a big difference when we see someone later. But for you, it's like, oh, we just saw Karen. She doesn't look that different from before. But, but if we had seen her from walk to walk, it'd be different. So we're here in Washington to ask for money and for signatures, but you have a very complicated life with ALS, and part of your job is to simplify it, right? And I think one of you found a way to simplify it today, right, in the Hill? You said you're just asking for $20 million and some signatures, right?
Yes, absolutely. All we need from you after our 15 minutes of presentation, this is all we need. We just need $20 million and a couple of signatures. That's not too much to ask.
And that's for the Department of Defense funding for research. That's for the
ALS Registry.
And the
Steve Gleason Act.
Which is
And the Dormant Therapies. Yes.
Which is the Steve Gleason Act for speech-generating devices and for the Dormant Therapies Act so we can expedite drug development.
Get all those drugs off the shelves and see what they can do.
And one of those people that probably is trying to make it easy to explain is your daughter, Delaney.
Oh,
who has been excited to speak more on this podcast, I can tell. This is your second year, Delaney,
uh-huh.
but you've been involved in a lot of ways as well, because you come to the walks. And you come to ALS Express?
Yeah, I just don't ride it.
Well, it's fine. I don't ride it either.
She cares.
She's been coming to the walks since she was in a stroller.
Wow.
Along with Emily. My daughter, Chrissy's daughter. the two of them in strollers. They were under a year. Well, Emily's under a year.
So the difference between Delaney and you guys is, even though your mom had ALS, you didn't spend your lives knowing about ALS, right?
No.
Whereas your life has pretty much been,
yeah,
had this going on throughout it, right?
Yeah.
So you're very well aware of the disease and about getting involved.
Oh, yeah.
And so what have you done, and what's your experience like coming to Capitol Hill? Do you enjoy coming on the Hill to talk?
Yeah,
to
I do enjoy coming on the Hill to talk. In the past, many years, I haven't really talked because I just, let the adults talk.
Well, I remember last year, your job was really to control your mom when she was crying.
That was this year, except I wasn't sitting next to her.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
But you do a lot of stuff through school.
Yeah.
You do a lot of...
I wear the t-shirts that we get from the walks all the time. Like, I've given t-shirts to people in my school, and I've done, a few language arts, projects on ALS, if it's been, informational, or letters to people.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, in seventh grade, I wrote a letter to Senator Casey, and we put it on his, about ALS, and we put it on his
I remember office. That. I think we helped send that out of it, too, on
yeah.
our end. So, Chantel, you're a teacher, and you're pretty inspired by the young people that get involved.
I am.
You've heard about some people locally. You're from Lancaster.
Yes, I am. And there is a high school girl at Warwick, Shahini,
mm-hmm.
and she did a science fair project along with the North Museum and was working on a cure for ALS. She had a family friend who was diagnosed, and so she put all of her, passionate student energy into this project, and we found out about it. I can't remember how we found out about it. I read
you,
an article.
You sent it to me.
Yes. There was an article in Lancaster's newspaper, and so I sent it to you, and you guys, through me, reached out to her school and got her contact information and invited her to the Hershey Walk.
Yeah, so she's going to be at the Hershey Walk.
She's very honored to be invited, and she's going to be there and walking.
She's going to cut the ribbon, I
think. Well, it's really neat that you're seeing young people, like your family involved. Like the Shohini person who we don't really know too well, but she's excited to be involved as a young person, and all the things have changed since your mom was diagnosed. So there's a lot more reason to feel more hopeful today than ever before, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So, and this is we need to cut off a little bit here because you're on your way to the next meeting with your congressman.
Yes,
Fitzpatrick.
And then after this, we'll put it up online, but then we're going to see you here next year, right? All five of you?
Absolutely.
Maybe a few more?
And it's my plan.
All right. So, well, thanks to the Delaney crew for remaining Delaney strong. I hope all of you can join them at one of every kind of event we have, ALSPhiladelphia.org, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, at ALS Philadelphia. And we hope you'll join us as an advocate here in Washington or back home. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you, Jamie.